Srila Prabhupada ki, Sri Bhakti Vaibhava ki, Grantara, Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Giridas Maharaj, Jantai Gopremanam ki. Okay, so what do we discuss previously?
Being self-satisfied, king for two, did it all duty perfectly well to satisfy of the Supreme Lord, and therefore all his activities were renewed.
Last one. What was the
last one? Because the world is not in the Krishna Prasad, there is just, if everybody loves us, there will be Krishna in them, except there are many, and there will be more things than
good. Anything else?
The Vrinda means to start between the Atma Meja and the Vrinda means Agrihastha to start between the Atma Meja and the
Vrinda. Anything else?
If one offers everything to Krishna and thinks everything in his house belongs to Krishna and he's just a servant,
then he's as good as
anything else. Real Brahmana, real Shakti are selfless.
Everything belongs to the Brahmana.
Yeah. This is the most important lesson that we learned last night, is that King Prithu, he saw that all of the possessions in his kingdom were simply for the purpose of satisfying the Brahmanas and Krishna. So he saw that everything actually belonged to the Brahmanas. So this is the way a devotee thinks. He thinks everything belongs to the Brahmanas, to the Guru, to the Vaishnavas, to Krishna. A devotee does not try to keep anything for themselves. But rather they think that everything must be offered for the service of Krishna and for his representatives. So tonight we'll see in verses 53 to 63, we'll see the ideal character of King Prithu in the final verses of this chapter. Then next week we'll begin chapter 23. At the end of chapter 23 you'll have your exam. Having your exam key?
No.
Okay.
Any other points?
Okay, so we'll go from verse 53.
Being situated in the liberated position of devotional service, Prithu Maharaj not only performed all fruitive activities, but also begot five sons by his wife, Archie. Indeed, all his sons were begotten according to his own desire. So, Sharon Mukhi, would you like to read the purport?
As the householder, Prithu Maharaj had five sons by his wife Archie, and all his sons were begotten as he desired them. They were not born mystically or by accident. How can one beget children according to one's own desire is practically unknown in the present age, Kali Yuga. In this regard, the secret of success depends on the parents' acceptance of the various purificatory methods known as samskara. The first samskara, the garbhadhara samskara, or child-begetting samskara, is compulsory, especially for the higher caste, the brahmana and the kshatriya. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, sex life which is not against religious principles is Krishna himself, and according to religious principles, when one wants to beget a child, he must perform the garbhadhana samskara before having sex. The mental state of the father and mother before sex will certainly affect the mentality of the child to be begotten. A child who is begotten out of lust may not turn out as the parents desire. As stated in the Shastra, yatha yonir yatha bijam. Yatha yoni indicates the mother and yatha bijam indicates the father. If the mental state of the parents is prepared before they have sex, The child-taking behavior will certainly reflect their mental condition. It is therefore understood by the word Atma-samatan that both Prithu Maharaj and Archie underwent the Garbhadhana purification process before begetting children, and thus they begot all their sons according to their desires and purified mental state. Prithu Maharaj did not beget his children out of lust, nor was he attracted to his wife for sense gratification purposes. He begot the children as a grihastha for the future administration of his government all over the world.
So what do we learn from this purport?
Yatha yoni yatha bijam. So the child will be what is the mentality of the parent. So Garbhadhan Sanskar is compulsory, especially for Brahmana and Kshatriya.
Okay. Any other points? That if you purify your consciousness before you conceive the child, then you will attract a child who is purified in consciousness.
Okay. Yes. But that's not sufficient, is it? That's
it? No. Then it depends on how you bring the child up. Depends on what the desires of the child are as they grow up. Okay. But it means you will receive a devotee as a child. If your consciousness is purified, then you'll receive a child who is a devotee. But then there's a lot of hard work afterwards, too.
What happened before?
Yeah. But I think that's the basic answer. Any other points?
The children are born after the parents have come to Krishna consciousness. Obviously, they are not born in that consciousness. So, what's their state? So, that Prabhu had given an example of how the horns of a cow were caught in the fence, and there was a debate as to how to unentangle the different types of that. And each one said, gave a few solutions, and one said, maybe we should just cut off the horns. So then the king asked as to how that person who had given that suggestion, as to how or in what state of mind the mother was when she gave birth to the child. So he came to know that child, that person who gave that suggestion, was born when the mother was giving birth to him, and she saw a goat being butchered. So
what's the point?
So he said when he narrated that pastime, I asked this question as to how children who are not born in Krishna consciousness. He said the word ruchi in Prabhupada's purport sometimes they even translated as taste for any kind of devotional service. It could be playing on the Ganga, chopping vegetables in the kitchen. So even if they are not born in that consciousness, if they are brought up in Krishna consciousness, there is still hope.
Yeah, because it means that when you do Garbhadhan Sanskara, then you purify the consciousness. So the man is in pure consciousness, purified consciousness. The woman is in purified consciousness. So then the child will be born with purified consciousness. Now, just because we weren't devotees when we conceived the child, but we still were good people. We may not have been practicing Krishna consciousness, but we were devotees. We believe in God. Maybe we weren't Vaishnavas and fully initiated and purified, but still we're not bad people. So you have to expect the children are good. they're not bad children, they're good children. And then when you take to Krishna consciousness, they also take to Krishna consciousness because they're similar to you. But then if you are already a devotee, then as Prabhupada points out in the purport, then Garbhadhan Samskara is compulsory. Right? It must be done because it purifies the consciousness. Previously, in the previous ages, there were so many rituals which they would perform in Garbhadhan Samskara. And just like you read in the Mahabharata, that the wives of the Kuru dynasty, they needed to create progeny, but there was no king left. The kings had died, Vichitravirya and the other king, I can't remember his name, they died. So then Bhishma was called upon, but Bhishma was a brahmachari, so then he would not conceive. So then they asked Vyasadeva, who was the brother, he was connected to the family, then they asked him to come. So Vyasadeva came, and then he conceived with the women, but because they said that to prepare oneself in the previous day, in the previous ages, to prepare yourself for Garbhadhan Samskara would take 1 year. Right? The man and the woman would have to take 1 year to purify their consciousness. They do austerities, give charity, do all sorts of purificatory activities, just so that when they conceived, then their child would be in good consciousness. So because they did not have 1 year, then they said, you must conceive immediately, tonight. Then Vyasadeva, then he said, when they see me, because I am a Tyagi, then just when they see me, that will be enough austerity to conceive with me like that. So then they said to the princesses, they said, prepare yourself and you will conceive tonight. And then they were thinking of Bhishma or someone was going to walk through the door. And then Vyasadeva walked through the door, right? And he was very, he's a great sage, and so he's a Tyagi, so he's not very attractive to the woman. So then the first princess, then when she conceived with Vyasadeva, she turned pale. Actually, I'm wrong. The first princess, she closed her eyes because she was so scared, because Vyasadeva looked so unattractive. Then Rasa, come on, get it together, I'm trying to talk here. So then Vyasadeva, he conceived with that girl, but then she became, she gave birth to Dhritarashtra, who was blind. Second princess, then she was very scared, then when she conceived with Vyasadeva, then she turned pale. So then the son who was born was Pandu, which means the pale one. And then the third, the princess, she could not conceive with him because she was too scared. So then she got the maidservant to come. So the maidservant came, and then Vidura was born. So who was not, strictly speaking, he's not part of the royal family, but because he's connected to the royal family, then he is considered part of the king, part of their palace, but he's not actually royalty like that. So this is Garbhadhan Samskara. It means that before the man, Prabhupada said it is compulsory. Before the man and the woman conceive the child, there must be purification of the consciousness. Now in Kali Yuga, Prabhupada says that the man and woman should chant 50 rounds Hare Krishna Maha Mantra before conceiving the child. This is the Yuga Dharma. Harinam, 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 Eva Kevalam, Kalo, Nasjeva, 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 Gatiya Anyata. This is what is required in Kali Yuga. Then the husband and wife, they should chant 50 rounds Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, minimum, purify the consciousness, and then attempt to conceive the child. And then you will attract a devotional entity. Right? So this is necessary. So Prithu Maharaj, he did like that, and had 5 sons, according to Garbhadhan Samskara, and they were very exalted personalities. Any points? Yes, sir.
Just a small question.
Oh, God.
We generally live. Often we see the devotee camps where the descendants of many elevated devotees would be there. They are even sometimes very angry towards the Krishna or something. So why exactly that particular kind of...
What's the question?
Sometimes we see from assuming of the next generation is not very favorable to this cause. In some cases they are like against the movement of the sometimes. So like, what's exactly wrong in that way?
It can be that even though they're exalted devotees, but when they conceived, they may not have been in the correct consciousness. That may be there. Okay. And it can also be that even when you conceive the child, but every living entity has its free will. So therefore, they may choose to not be devotees themselves in the future. And in Kali Yuga, everything's a little messed up also. So it seems like, which I think is what you were kind of asking a little bit before. Sometimes in Kali Yuga, things don't work perfectly. Things just don't work perfectly in Kali Yuga. It's hard to work it out. Even Prabhupada had his children, right? But his wife was not like Prabhupada. She was not like same consciousness as Prabhupada. Prabhupada had his children, but not all the children were devotees. Even it says the children of Advaita Acharya, some of them were Mayavadis. It's very hard to understand all these things. Does that help to give any clarification? I think you're more confused than before you asked. It's not my fault, it's Kali Yuga.
Can I make a comment on that, Prabhu?
Yes, please.
This is my little understanding, Prabhu, that Krishna makes the arrangement so that advanced devotees, they naturally get attached in their own family and then they become worldwide preachers or they become big preachers, and therefore they will attract other souls wherever they are to take a step toward Krishna. If, for example, Prabhupada, if his children were devotees, possibly Prabhupada wouldn't have taken sannyas and then he wouldn't have started the movement. Big deal. We find similarly many devotees, senior devotees, Vaishnava, their children not taking the Krishna consciousness has made them more detached from their own family and they become teachers and therefore the movement.
So the point I was trying to make, by chanting 50 rounds, you become favorable. But that's one part. The second part is, how you being to that point already? How was your consciousness? And how you took that 50 rounds altogether? So that might help. But the major portion is already coming up. Their consciousness, their view of life, their karma, and everything.
Yeah.
So just that is necessary, yes, you have to do that. But that's not guaranteed, yes, if you do this. Because it's a function of so many other things as well.
Yeah.
Post is different.
Yeah, because you might chant 50 rounds, but you might not chant 50 very good rounds. So, you chanted 50 rounds, but your consciousness may have been struggling. So therefore, that may not be, like you said, it's not the all in all. So one has to prepare himself so that one is in good consciousness. So when one does perform Gavadan Samskara, then he will have an opportunity to attract a devotional child. It's a technical thing. It doesn't seem that it always works. Sometimes parents are very good, children are not so good. Sometimes, even I know some very advanced devotees, their parents were not so advanced, they're devotees, but not so advanced, and the children are very advanced. So it's hard to work it all out. Any other points?
On that point, do I think it's like you are adding fertilizer to a plant. It doesn't mean that the plant will come up very nicely, but the conditions are very favorable for the plant to come up very well. But still some weeds can come even though the fertilizer. That's what I want to do.
Good analogy. Anything else?
So here it says that the samskara is compulsory, but in letter of devotion and introduction, Prabhupada says that I'm not so keen on that, but since all the devotees were aching, that's why I'm insisting on me, insisting for the samskara finally, saying I'm agreeing to that, something like that.
Not sure. You have to show us the passage and then work it out. Okay. After begetting 5 sons named Vijitashwa, Dumrakesha, Hayaksha, Dravina, and Vrika, Prithu Maharaj continued to rule the planet. He accepted all the qualities of the deities who governed all other planets. Satchaprabhu, can you read it?
In each and every planet, there is a predominating deity. It is understood from Bhagavad Gita that in the sun there is a predominating deity named Vivaswan. Similarly, there is a predominating deity of the moon and the various planets. Actually, the predominating deities in all the other planets are descendants from the predominating deities of sun and moon. On this planet Earth, there are 2 Kshatriya dynasties, and one comes from the predominating deity of sun and other comes from the predominating deity of the moon. These dynasties are known as Surya Vamsa and Chandra Vamsa respectively. When the monarchy existed on this planet, the chief member was one of the members of Surya dynasty or Surya Vamsa, and the subordinate kings belonged to Chandra Vamsa. However, Maharaj Prithu was so powerful that he could exhibit all the qualities of the predominating deities in other planets.
Thank you, Prabhu.
In the modern age, people from Earth have tried to go to Moon, but they have not been able to find anyone there. Not to speak of meeting the Moon's predominating deity. The Vedic literature, however, repeatedly informs us the Moon is full of highly elevated inhabitants who are counted amongst the demigods, who are therefore always in doubt about what kind of moon adventure the modern scientists of this planet Earth have undertaken.
What do you think?
They never read me.
They never read me. But it was on television.
Fake.
It was fake.
Even there's a documentary on the site, there is a documentary where they are saying like how they just manage everything in a studio, in a room, and they are focusing their lights and everything, and they are like 4 or 5 reasons they are telling me it's not possible, because Armstrong, like who went in the first, he's not answering properly to the journalists over there. Like 4 or 5 reasons they told, like the flag is moving as there is no rain, so how flag is moving. They
Shadows were different.
Yeah, shadows were different. It's a complete documentary, around 15 minutes.
So Prabhupada was very sure they didn't read me.
But 60% of America believes that they did. What do you think?
Today in the news I was reading there.
Moon is too far away.
Ice on moon. And they are saying that now there's water, so in future man can think of going and residing on moon and all.
So the point is that we have to put our faith somewhere. Either you put your faith in the Vedic evidence or the Vedic authority, or you put your faith in material authority. So either way, you have to have faith. Everyone has Shraddha, everyone has faith. But where will your Shraddha lie? Do you have faith that Prabhupada says we didn't go to the moon, or you have faith in NASA who says that we did go to the moon? So there's all a test of faith. Now for us, we believe that they did not go to the moon, because Prabhupada gives so many reasons why, and he's one of the main reasons he gives is that because the moon is a heavenly planet and everyone there is extremely advanced in consciousness, and when they got there all they saw was rocks and craters and dust like that. There was nothing significant there. It's described on the moon there was glowing grass, which grows on the moon. Like that. It's a very opulent place. So Prabhupada said they did not go to the moon. Prabhupada watched it when it happened, 1969, July 1969, when they actually did the moon landing, August, July. Then Prabhupada was watching it in London, and Prabhupada said, this is not the moon. Moon does not look like this. Okay. How bold and how intelligent and how brave Prabhupada was, because most people who watched that actually believed that that was happening. Probably 90% of the people who watched that believed that was happening, if not more. And Prabhupada was so bold, he said, no, this is not happening. So much faith he had in the Vedas. And then he convinced us, so many millions of people he's convinced that this did not happen. Not that. And now something like around 60% of America believe it still. 40% say it's not true, but 60% say it is true. So who will you believe? That is your choice. Yeah, they went a few times. But then, yeah, that is a strong argument. Why they don't keep going. Okay. One time, Prabhupada was sitting with all the leaders of our movement, I think around about 1975 in Mayapur, just after the Mayapur Festival, during the Mayapur Festival, after the GBC meetings. These were all the leaders in our movement. And Prabhupada said, are you convinced that Krishna is God? And he said, put up your hand. He said, if you are convinced that Krishna is God. Right? And no one put their hand up. Not one devotee put their hand up. You imagine if Prabhupada sitting right here, right now, and Prabhupada said, are you convinced that Krishna is God? Will you put your hand up? Put your hand up if you believe. Oh, pretty advanced, group. They should have made you the guys the leaders. Like that. But I think it would be different if Prabhupada said it to him. I know it would be different if Prabhupada said it. Because then that will really test your faith very, very deeply. Okay. This is the point. The point is the spiritual life is based upon faith, and if we have faith in Krishna, if we have faith in the Vedas, then we advance. If we have faith in material science or the material way of thought, then we will go to a different destination. So everything is being tested. So it all depends on where our faith lies. So Prabhupada is saying in this purport, he's questioning, do we go to the moon or not? Any points? Yeah, Arizona, and they also say Hawaii. Yeah, they say, we don't know where it was. Somewhere they did it. There was a movie that came out a few years after the moon landing. It was called Capricorn One. It's all about it being a hoax. Like that. But it says at the beginning of the film, on the bottom of the, when the film was starting, it says on the bottom, it says this film is just a fictitious story. Yeah? It's just a story. We're not saying it was not true, it's just a story. But why did they make the film? And there's a James Bond movie, I can't remember which one it was, but then he's running through the desert on a dune buggy and someone's chasing him, and then he smashes through a hangar, like a big aircraft kind of thing, smashes through the wall, and he goes through, and there's all these spacemen kind of floating around like they're on the moon. And then he goes out the other side. And they never say anything about it, but just interesting that they're indicating, oh, it was just a hoax. Like that, so. Prabhupada said that from the very beginning. Maybe Prabhupada was the first one to say, this is a hoax.
And then they first send the monkey, and then they send the dog, and then they send the monkey, and then
yeah, there's a whole reason why it happened. It was actually just a ego battle between Russia and America. That's what it was. We haven't got time to go into it. Okay. Since Maharaj Prithu was a perfect devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, He wanted to protect the Lord's creation by pleasing the various citizens according to their various desires. Therefore, Prithu Maharaj used to please them in all respects by his words, mentality, works, and gentle behavior. So, follow for the reason.
And so we explain that in the next verse, Prithu Maharaj used to please all kinds of citizens by his extraordinary capacity to understand the mentality of others. Indeed, his dealings were so perfect that every one of the citizens was very much satisfied and lived in complete peace. The word Ashrita Makha is significant in this verse, for Maharaj Prithu used to rule this planet as the representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He knew that he was the representative of the Lord and that the Lord's creation must be protected intelligently. Atheists cannot understand the purpose behind the creation. Although this material world is condemned, when it is compared to the spiritual world, there is still some purpose behind it. Modern scientists and philosophers cannot understand that purpose, nor do they believe in the existence of a creator. They try to establish everything by their so-called scientific research, but they do not center anything around the Supreme Creator. A devotee, however, can understand the purpose of creation, which is to give facilities to the individual living entities who want to lord it over material nature. The ruler of this planet should therefore know that all the inhabitants, especially human beings, have come to this material world for sense enjoyment. It is therefore the duty of the ruler to satisfy them in their sense enjoyment, as well as to elevate them to Krishna consciousness so that they all can ultimately return home back to God.
So now, from this verse onwards, there is a description of the qualities of a leader. So then, if you're interested in developing your leadership qualities, then you should take careful note of this verse onwards until the end of the chapter. So what are the points in this particular?
Class we gave this morning to the inhabitants, exactly same. We all have come for sense enjoyment. It was a basic idea.
So leadership means that you must understand the mentality of those who you are leading. You must be very expert in understanding someone's mentality, and you must be able to instruct them accordingly. Because everyone is on a different level of spiritual advancement. So, as a leader, we need to become expert in understanding how advanced someone is in Krishna consciousness and how much we can instruct them. Because you cannot instruct everyone in exactly the same manner. You can't give the same instructions to every devotee. So, as a leader, you have to be very sensitive and very careful in understanding what is the level of advancement of every person, so that you can give particular instructions for that person. So, Maharaj Prithu is very expert because he understands how much material facility people need and how much spiritual encouragement they need, or how much spiritual advancement they are prepared to make at this point in time. So then the leader, he has to understand, well, this person needs more material facility. So the guru may give instruction. He may say, you get married, you don't get married. Because he understands everyone is on different levels of spiritual advancement. So he will give different instructions like that. And then according to how advanced they are, then he will give instructions according to their level of spiritual advancement also. Not everyone is equally advanced, so you can't give the same instruction. Right? Someone who's more advanced, then you can instruct them very directly, and others you have to instruct them very carefully, according to their level of advancement. So Prithu Maharaj, he's expert in understanding how to fulfill the desires of all of his citizens. Any points?
During speaking, can you give us some clue how we can determine that form?
First thing is that when you preach, you have to listen first, then speak. So when someone, if you're preaching to someone, first of all you have to ask questions. You know, who are you, where did you come from? Just like we had the Sunday feast at the farm on the weekend. So then three new people came. So then, you know, when we first meet them, then you find out as much as you can about them. You know, who are you, where did you come from, what are you interested in, and how did you find out about this place, like that. And then the more you know about them, then the more you can instruct them. But if you don't know about them, then how can you instruct? You can't just preach to everyone the same. Okay, so. Any other points?
It's a small story, but it takes 5 minutes.
5 minutes is too long. Yeah, save it for you. What's that? Afterwards, we can stay 5 minutes longer. Not now. Afterwards. If you want to hear, you can stay. 5 minutes, 2 minutes. Any other points? Okay.
This is mimicking Rama example, the way this is being described. Lord Rama, in his kingdom, it is said that he ruled the so perfectly, so nicely, that at the end, all the citizens were taken along with him to my and here we find similar situation that Prithu Maharaj has satisfied everyone's requirement at the same time elevated him.
Yeah, that's an ideal leader. Okay. Maharaj Prithu became as celebrated a king as Somaraj, the king of the moon. He was also powerful and exacting, just like the sun god, who distributes heat and light and at the same time exacts all the material waters. Exacts all the planetary waters. Trying to shake up with it.
In this verse, Maharaja Prithu is compared to the king of the moon and sun. The king of the moon and the king of the sun serve as examples of how the Lord desires the universe to be ruled. The sun distributes heat and light and at the same time extracts water from all planets. The moon is very pleasing at night and when it becomes fatigued after a day's labor in the sun, you can enjoy the moonshine. Like the sun god, Prithu Maharaj distributed his heat and light to give protection to his kingdom. For without heat and light, no one can exist. Similarly, Prithu Maharaj extracted taxes and gave such strong orders to citizens and government that no one had the power to disobey him. On the other hand, he pleased everyone just like the moonshine. Both the sun and moon have particular influences by which they maintain order in the universe. And modern scientists and philosophers should become familiar with the Supreme God's focused plan for universal maintenance.
It's one of the points in this purport. Means it evaporates the water, makes the clouds, and then the clouds spill the rain. Any other point? Anything else?
The moon, they said the moon is the one that is the nourishing factor for all the field and everything for the field, and the sun is also very essential for the plants and everything to grow. So that's why we are saying it's like the moon and the king of the sun and the moon.
Qualities of the leaves are again coming out.
You want to just briefly repeat? You have to speak loudly, so.
The qualities of a leader are coming up. How Srila Prabhupada was very compassionate. At first he was giving everyone and then the disciples were following him. In the initial years of his cause, he put in a lot of effort. He used to cook and feed him and other things. Then the disciples were giving him return by following his instructions in their life.
So the leader needs to be simultaneously strict and caring. This is the perfect leader. Just like in parenting, when you're a parent, then you have to be strict, but then you have to be very caring, very loving. And this is the right combination. Because if you're only one of them, then the child or the citizen or the person who is following you, they will not be balanced. Too much of one or too much of the other will make the person imbalanced. So therefore, one must be very caring, but simultaneously has to be very strict. And then this will create good character for the person. Because the person will feel nurtured and loved and cared for, but simultaneously they will not develop improper habits or become develop improper qualities. They will remain very pious and they'll develop nicely. So Prithvi Maharaj is showing this example. It's like the sun. The sun is very powerful, but the moon is very soothing. So both have to be there. Any points?
Normally we find as a combination parent, mother is caring and father is very strict. So parents, they find the intent of children. They rarely find both qualities being present in the same person.
Really? Yeah, I think they're both there in both the parents, but to different degrees, obviously.
But the way we behave in the family, either the children, they know that who from whom they get that extra bit of inch from what they don't get, and accordingly, they also adjust.
Any other points?
You can say that the moonlight is a reflection of the sun or not?
Yeah, it's like that. But the moon also has sun glow itself. But Prabhupada says it's also reflecting the sun. Yeah, he says both. Yeah, he says that the moon has glowing grass on it, so it has sunlight, but he also said it reflects the sun, which it obviously does, because you see the moon, the phase. If it was just glowing itself, then it would just be full all the time. It's not like the sun is always full. So it means it's glowing itself, as the moon is reflecting, like that. But there's also some luminous substance on this. Anything else?
Prabhu, the moon planet is Chandradev, and 27 of the nakshatras are the wife of the moon planet, like Rohini and 26 of the stars, they are the wife of the moon. And the moon is Chandradev.
Yeah. Maharaj Prithu was so strong and powerful that no one could disobey his orders any more than one could conquer fire itself. He was so strong that he was compared to Indra, the king of heaven, whose power was insuperable. On the other hand, Maharaj Prithu was also as tolerant as the earth, and in fulfilling various desires of human society, he was like heaven itself. Yogeshwara Govinda.
It is the duty of a king to give protection to the citizens and fulfill their desires. At the same time, the citizens must obey the laws of the state. Maharaj Prithu maintained all the standards of good government, and he was so invincible that no one could disobey his orders any more than a person could stop heat and light emanating from a fire. He was so strong and powerful that he was compared to the king of heaven, Indra. In this age, modern scientists have been experimenting with nuclear weapons, and in a former age they used to release brahmastras. But all these brahmastras and nuclear weapons are insignificant compared to the thunderbolt of the king of heaven. When Indra releases a thunderbolt, even the biggest hills and mountains crack. On the other hand, Maharaj Prithu was as tolerant as the earth itself, and he fulfilled all the desires of the citizens just like the torrents of rain from the sky. Without rainfall, it is not possible to fulfill one's various desires on this planet. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita 3.14, Parchanyat Anat Sambhava. Food grains are produced only because of rainfall and from the sky, and without grains, no one on the earth can be satisfied. Consequently, an unlimited distribution of mercy is compared to the water falling from the clouds. Maharaj distributed his mercy incessantly, much like rainfall. In other words, Maharaj Prithu was softer than the rose flower and harder than the thunderbolt. In this way, he ruled over his kingdom.
So any points here?
Same points that have been spoken to, that he is actually showing the softness of rose and power of thunderbolt, that's because he's using both extremes to control people who are not actually obeying and actually being nice, having a mixed balance, I suppose.
Good. Anything else?
I am like a lion and I can be profitable or something.
Yeah.
By preaching.
Well, he gave this example. He said devotees should be, or can be, as soft as a rose and as hard as a thunderbolt. So sometimes devotees are like that. They're very soft and sometimes they're very heavy.
One of Srila Prabhupada's disciples, and he's still there, he used to like chocolates or something. He used to take money for buying vegetables, and then he used to siphon off the money and eat chocolates. And Prabhupada just let him do that, but one day he bought chocolates and gave it to Prabhupada and said, "I got it for you." And then Prabhupada said, "You don't need these things." And but they really stick to him. But at the same time, the Prabhupada said that, "Do you like eating sweets so much?" So he said, "Yes, I can't give up this." So the Prabhupada said, "Okay, come with me." And Prabhupada himself cooked halwa for him, hot halwa, and him served him personally. And after eating that, he never had the desire for him. Mm-hmm. So he was more strict like a father and compassionate like that.
It's not mentioned here, but he mentioned that he's also very tolerant. Now, for a king to be tolerant, I'm just thinking how he can show his tolerance for it. And for kings, he can be compassionate, but tolerant, what is he tolerant?
No, because the leader, when one is a leader, then that is Vatsalya Bhav. Just like the parent is Vatsalya Bhav. Okay? So does the parent have to tolerate the children? Doesn't have to tolerate the children? Perfect. You must have a good child. So the parent has to tolerate so much. So anyone who is a leader, you have to tolerate so much. The citizens will do so many things. Yeah? Everyone in the kingdom will do so many things. So many things go wrong in life. So this shows, then we have to show tolerance, forbearance.
Acceptance,
yeah, or tolerance. Tolerance is the correct word. To tolerate. You have to tolerate so many things.
When you excuse the mistakes committed by citizens if they are genuinely committed or unknowingly committed, but otherwise he may punish them. If somebody does the same thing unknowingly, he would not excuse. But someone who has done it unknowingly, he would excuse them.
When he ends up to the horse and for sacrifice, he didn't say something.
So in this purport, there are three qualities which come. The first quality is that one who is a leader, he must have tejas. Tejas means, in Gita, Krishna says, extraordinary power. We see that when the leader has great potency, then everyone develops confidence in the leader. Because he's very potent, very powerful. Then everyone becomes very inspired to follow that personality. So in the previous days, the Kshatriyas, or the great rulers, they would have this quality of Tejas, which means they're very chivalrous, very heroic, very powerful. And by having this quality, everyone would become inspired by them. Second quality which is mentioned is tolerance, that the leader must be tolerant, as we already said, because there's so much to tolerate in life. So the leader must show this quality of tolerance. We must learn this quality of tolerance, to tolerate. And the third quality which is there is magnanimity. The leader is very magnanimous. Means he gives so much to the citizens. This is what it means to be a leader. To be a leader means you have to give so much to others. Continuously you have to give and give and give. This is what it takes to be a leader, that you give so much. So the great leaders, they're able to give so much to others and make everyone satisfied. That is leadership. Everyone becomes satisfied by that person. So that is the quality of the great leader. Any points here?
This is extraordinary power has been shown by leaders like Hitler, through his sheer speech, he could convince the entire nation to the war, including Winston Churchill, the wartime prime minister, for his speeches. He could enthuse the entire nation to participate in the war. So maybe not like Putuma as the Tejas, but these people had another part of the so-called Tejas with which they could enthuse the people. Today people say that Obama is the equivalent. Very powerful person was concerned that he could convince the citizens not least with his speeches and the way he talks.
When we learned, when we talk of history in our country, because there are many things that were respected like this, there was one story when the wife of a king betrayed him, and that's how he got caught up. And when the king came, he really liked her, but then he saw the sword of her husband, and he couldn't even lift the sword. And he said, "You betray a person like this, and he couldn't like her anymore." But the point was, the sword was so heavy that the other king even couldn't lift it. They were so powerful. And there was also a description of one of the kings who was fighting with the wild swine. I don't know how you call them. The wild swines were really...
Boar.
Is it boar? So they're really strong, so he will fight there handed.
Anything else?
About Obama, it is said that he was, right from the beginning, a very intelligent person. In the age of 20 years, to restore the system, that both the parties were agreeing to it. Because even then, 19, about Obama, when he was 20-year-old, even then he could make people convince so nicely, even his opposition, that they all liked and became friends to him.
Just as rainfall satisfies everyone's desires, Maharaj Prithu used to satisfy everyone. He was like the sea, in that no one could understand its depths, and he was like Meru, the king of hills, in the fixity of his purpose. Lila Mai, can you read that?
Maharaj Prithu used to distribute his mercy to suffering humanity. And it was like rainfall after excessive heat. The ocean is wide and expansive, and it is very difficult to measure its length and breadth. Similarly, Prithu Maharaj was so deep and great that no one could fathom his purposes. The hill known as Meru is fixed in the universe as a universal pilot, and no one can move it an inch from its position. Similarly, no one could ever detail Maharaj detail.
So what's in this purple?
Firstly, he gave mercy to humanity, to all people. And second thing was, he was so determined that he was able to dissuade him.
So these two qualities come. First quality is that he is grave. Right? Grave means, Mahaprabhu says, 26 qualities of the devotee. One of these qualities is Gambhira. Gambhira means the devotee is very deep or very grave. So devotees have this qualification, they have great depth. And actually, it says that gravity comes through silence. This is taught by Bhishma Dev in the first canto of the Bhagavad Gita. If you want to develop gravity, then practice mauna, or silence. You see, often people talk too much. They just talk and talk and talk, unnecessarily. Like that. But then they lose this quality of gravity. They just become very... And then they just speak all sorts of things just for the sake of talking. But if you want to become grave and very deep and develop some depth of character, then one must practice some mauna. One must be silent. So the first qualification is gravity, second qualification is determination. He said that when he was fixed in purpose, fixed to do something, he could not be moved. So that is the quality of leadership. We have to take decisions and stick with the decision. Sometimes we make a decision, but then we see everyone doesn't like it. So then what do we do? Immediately we'll change back and we'll just say, oh no, no, I'm too scared. No, but a real leader, when he understands something is correct, then he will stick to it. Even if it is not popular, he will become very fixed. So this is the quality of Maharaj Prithu. He is like Mount Meru. Mount Meru means? Fixed. Just cannot be moved. So that is what the leader is like. It's very fixed in Krishna consciousness. You have to become determined. If you want to make advancement in spiritual life, you have to become determined. Just like the example is given of Raghunath Das Goswami, his vows were like the lines in the stone. He was so fixed that just like when you carve a line in the stone, you cannot move it. So this is what it's like. To be a devotee means you have to be very fixed. Not changing just because the circumstances change all the time. Oh, I didn't chant my rounds today because there were too many difficulties. No, this is not determined. This is not fixed. Fixed means, no matter what, then I will hold my vows. That is how you become determined in spiritual life. So Maharaj Prithu, he was like that. Completely fixed in spiritual life. Not that he is wavering, not that he is changing, not that he is affected by all the external circumstances continuously. Any points?
So it said there are three characteristics of leaders. He said generosity in design, humanity in execution, and moderation in design. So that's what it is.
Good. Where's it come from? It's good. It's true. It means it's Vedic. Because Prabhupada says everything, all knowledge comes from the Vedas. So you can say it's Vedic because it's true. Any other points?
Determination, the fact that Uttar Maharaj is so determined, and I take it as that he was extraordinarily intelligent, so he could understand a thing and then he would stick to that. You know what is that impact if you take the position. And a person who is not intelligent, he keeps wavering because he's not sure of what's, whether it's good or it's bad, or should he do it or should he not do it.
Anything else? Okay. Maharaj Prithu's intelligence and education were exactly like that of Yamaraj, the superintendent of death. His opulence was comparable to the Himalayan mountains, where all valuable jewels and metals are stocked. He possessed great riches like Kuvera, the treasurer of the heavenly planets, and no one could reveal his secrets, for they were like the demigods. Like the demigod Varunas. Okay. Read the next. In his bodily strength and in the strength of his senses, Maharaj Prithu was as strong as the wind, which can go anywhere and everywhere. As far as his intolerance was concerned, he was just like the all-powerful Rudra, expansion of Lord Shiva or Sadashiva. In his bodily beauty, he was just like Cupid, and in his thoughtfulness, he was like a lion. In his affection, he was just like Swayambhuva Manu, and in his ability to control, he was like Lord Brahma. In his personal behavior, Prithu Maharaj exhibited all good qualities, and in spiritual knowledge, he was exactly like Brihaspati. In self-control, he was like the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself. As far as his devotional service was concerned, he was a great follower of devotees who were attached to cow protection and the rendering of all service to the spiritual master and the brahmanas. He was perfect in his shyness and in his gentle behavior. And when he engaged in some philanthropic activity, he worked as if he were working for his own personal self.
When Lord Chaitanya talked to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, the Lord honored him as the incarnation of Brihaspati. Brihaspati is the chief priest of the heavenly kingdom, and he is a follower of the philosophy known as Brahmavada or Mayavada. Brihaspati is also a great logician. It appears from the statement that Maharaj Prithu, although a great devotee, constantly engaged in the loving service of the Lord, could defeat all kinds of impersonalists and Mayavadis by his profound knowledge of Vedic scriptures. We should learn from Maharaj Prithu that a Vaishnava or a devotee must not only be fixed in the service of the Lord, but if required must be prepared to argue with the impersonalist Mayavadis with all logic and philosophy and defeat their contention that the absolute truth is impersonal.
So what's the most purpose?
Firstly, loving service to the Lord, and second point is arguing the Mayavadis.
Smash them. Okay.
So is Brahmavada different to Mayavada? No?
Which one?
Brahmavada are different to Mayavada.
Brahmavada and Mayavada?
Yeah. Different.
Yeah, different. Two different things.
What's the difference?
Mayavada means that they understand that the Lord's form, or they say that the Lord's form is false. Maya means false. And Brahmavadi means he does not understand what the absolute truth is. but he understands there is something is supreme, but he's not sure what it is, whether it's Paramatma, whether it's Bhagavan, or whether it's Brahman, like that. So he has not offended Krishna because he has not called Krishna's form as being false. The Mayavadi isn't a Pashandi or an offender because he says the form is false, whereas the Brahmavadi is unsure, so he does not commit offence. So Prabhupada says that devotees must be qualified and ready to defeat the Mayavadis. You must be able to defeat the Mayavadis when necessary. Not that we don't even worry about them. Like sometimes some people, they become very argumentative. You're preaching to someone, they begin to argue. So usually, if they're too argumentative and they're not listening and they are not able to be persuaded, then usually we just let them go. Don't try to spend time trying to convince them if they're not willing to be convinced. If they're simply committing offences and they're speaking improperly, then we simply do not waste our time. What's the use of wasting their time? We're convinced in what we're convinced in, and if they're not willing to listen, if they're argumentative, then like that. But sometimes we may be in a public situation, just like I remember many years ago, I gave the Sunday Feast Lecture here in Melbourne, and someone was arguing with me at the end. So I knew that this person had no hope of understanding anything, because he was very argumentative. But for the benefit of everyone else, then we challenged back and forth. And he was saying, and then I was saying like that. Well, we're having a debate like that. It was only for the benefit of everyone else. So generally, we don't like to argue, but sometimes we have to challenge the Mayavadis. If they have their impersonal doctrine, then sometimes we'll challenge. Usually just for ourselves, we don't have any real need to do it. Okay, read the next paragraph. Next paragraph is very enlightening. Mm-hmm. Preeti, you like to read the next? Second paragraph.
The Supreme Personality called is the ideal self-controller or brahmachari. When Krishna was elected to the presidency of the Rajasuya Yajna, performed by Maharaj Yudhishthira, grandfather Bhishma Dev praised Lord Krishna as the great brahmachari. Because grandfather Bhishma Dev was a brahmachari, he was quite fit to distinguish a brahmachari from a vyabhichari. Although Prithu Maharaj was a householder and father of 5 children, he was still considered to be most controlled. One who begets Krishna conscious children for the benefit of humanity is actually a brahmachari. One who simply begets children like cats and dogs is not a proper father. The word brahmachari also refers to one who acts on the spectrum of Brahman or devotional service. In the impersonal Brahman conception, there is no activity. Yet when one performs activities in connection with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he is to be known as brahmachari. Thus, Prithu Maharaj was an ideal brahmachari and used for simultaneity. Who refers to those devotees who are constantly engaged in the service of the Lord. Other devotees must follow in their footsteps. Srila Narottam Das Thakur said, "Ehi chaya gosani yandra muni chandra dasa." He is prepared to become the disciple of anyone who follows in the footsteps of the six gosani.
So in this paragraph, then Prabhupada is emphasizing that Grihastha means Brahmachari Grihastha. This is what is being mentioned by Bhaktisananda Saraswati Thakur. That although we are Grihastha, that actually we're Brahmachari Grihastha. Because strictly we observe celibacy and we only engage in sex life in order to procreate the children. So therefore that is Brahmachari Grihastha. And this is actual Grihastha life. And if you have that kind of Grihastha life, then you'll beget very nice children. If that is your consciousness, like that. So, Prithu Maharaj, it also mentions that he was willing to treat others as he would treat himself. And he was dedicated to the protection of cows, brahmanas, and the spiritual master. Now, this is proper leadership. Proper leadership means we must protect cows, especially. Proper leadership means we protect all living entities, but especially the cows, the brahmanas, and the spiritual master must be respected and protected. So no matter which position we're in, but if we're leaders, then these things must be protected. This is Vedic culture. Vedic culture has not survived because cows and brahmanas and the spiritual master have not been revered and respected. And that's why Vedic culture is degenerated all over the world. So it's the responsibility of every devotee to protect the cows, to protect the brahmanas, and to protect the spiritual master, or to worship the spiritual master. We'll read the final paragraph, final verse. But throughout the whole universe, in the higher, lower, and middle planetary systems, Prithu Maharaj's reputation was loudly declared, and all the ladies and saintly persons heard his glories, which were as sweet as the glories of Lord Ram Chandra. So Prabhupada explains in the purport that these days people want the kingdom of Ram without Lord Ram. So you want to enjoy all the facilities of a peaceful, happy, prosperous society, but you don't want to worship God. So how can it be possible? You will only have a happy, peaceful, and prosperous society when you worship Krishna. So when you worship Krishna, automatically you get these things. You get happiness, you get peace, you get prosperity. When you don't worship Krishna, you cannot get these things. So these days, the world is so mixed up, the people, they want to have a perfect, peaceful, happy life, but they don't want to worship God. And then they wonder why they're not peaceful, why they're not happy, and why they're not prosperous. Like that. So this is the ideal situation. One must worship Lord Ram, one must worship Lord Krishna, and then one will have a happy, prosperous, and peaceful situation. So we'll stop here. Next week we'll begin chapter 23. At the end of chapter 23 you'll have your exam. So hopefully it will not be too far away. Srila Prabhupada ki.